The Good Times Everton podcast with Kevin Melling and Liam Knight, brewing the Toffees since 1995.
The Good Times Everton podcast is brought to you in association with the Excelsior. Based on Dale Street in Liverpool City Centre, it is a brilliant pub. They have six cask ales, airing on draft, and some of the best staff in town. They also have a weekly quiz with a £40 bar tab as first prize, and their back room is available to hire for free for your function or event. It is also where the Good Times Everton podcast quiz takes place on occasion, and the next one is the 15th of May. Come and join us from 7:30 p.m. as we say goodbye to Goodison Park.
Hi everyone, welcome to this rather special edition of the Good Times Everton podcast. We've got an interview celebrating a song that I think is important to many Evertonians and has shaped a lot of views in the Good Times period. We are discussing the Cup Final song from 1995 altogether now, and I'm really pleased to be joined by the brilliant Keith Mullen of The Farm, who's been really kind and willing to come on to discuss it. So, first of all, Keith, thanks for coming on. It's really good to have you on. I'm really going to start with, obviously, most people are aware of Altogether Now, long before the Cup Final. Obviously, it was a hit from 1990 that was, you know, an international hit and a really popular song. But I want you to talk me through a little bit how it came about, it becoming Everton's Cup Final tune.
Well, obviously, that was one of those kind of years where we had a lot of success in the FA Cup in terms of getting to the final, and we'd kind of arrived at that point as a team where, you know, we were in an FA Cup final and all the usual. I mean, the FA Cup was a very different beast back then. Do you know what I mean? As you well know, it was one of the major trophies. It was a major local trophy and one of the major things that footballing event in the footballing calendar.
It was a day in itself, a pure event, wasn't it? The FA Cup final.
Yeah, so, you know, the FA Cup then used to start at like 7 a.m. and it would be like, you know, on, you know, running commentary of the events of the day and all of that. So, you know, it was still had that appeal then, even though the Premier League had been in existence for about 5 years at that particular point, you know. And all I remember is being in the studio with the band and our manager coming into us and saying, Everton want to use, or asking, can they use Altogether Now as their football, the cup final song for, you know, because they got to the final at that point. And when you're kind of going to use someone else's song in the way that Everton wanted to use it, which was, you know, to change the original form of the song and change the lyrics, really, you have to have the permission of the songwriters. If they were to just cover the song, like a lot of people do, they could just cover the song and put it out and wouldn't necessarily have to ask the songwriters. So the request come through to the band, and then that request went to Peter and Steve, but mainly Peter, because Peter is a Liverpool fan and he wrote the lyrics to Altogether Now, the original form. So in order to be able to change the lyrics, you have to get the permission of the writer, you know, and obviously being a Red, you know, he deliberated over that, you know, because, like, not just because of his Everton, but because, you know, if you're changing the lyrics of someone's song, that's quite significant, really.
It's a personal song as well, isn't it? Because it was written from his own experience of being up on the armistice and that.
and it's personal, but it's also got a real historic value. It's about the unofficial truce between the Germans and the English in the First World War, you know, so it's a very significant song, and also of real meaning to Peter because he wrote the lyrics for it. So, so that request went in, and so he was deliberating, and there was lots of discussions going on. Should we allow? Even I was like, you know, should we really allow someone to change the lyrics of the song? Yeah. You know, and so a lot of bit of debate. But obviously, me being an Evertonian and one of a member of the band, not being an Evertonian, but wanting to go to the game, you know. I was like, you know, come on. And I mean, at that particular stage, I had done loads for them. You know, I played the last day at a cop. I'd done all kinds because they're my mates. Do you know what I mean? As well as we're different, we support different teams, but we're mates first and foremost, you know. And so, we, you know, I'd done quite a lot, you know, and And also, you know, the kids at the time, our kids at the time were like, you know, oh, because they were Evertonians, you know what I mean? They were one of the, our kids and Steve's young son was an Evertonian. And so we used kid pressure and me going, come on. But ultimately, and the person that Peter, and I hope he won't mind me saying this, the person that Peter kind of consulted with is dad. And his dad is a lifelong Liverpool fan. And his dad is very, you know, considerate, honourable, fair, lovely man, you know, was from the old school, who's been going to Liverpool all his life. And because the song's about, the song is about unity, it is about hugging your enemies, it is about breaking down those barriers. And it's about an unofficial truce between two enemies. You know, his dad basically said, if you don't like the music, you're a hypocrite. You know, really, considering what the song's about. And also, you know, other football teams were asking to use at the time, and they'd said, but they weren't necessarily changing the lyrics. So, Peter agreed. You know. And I think that's commendable, really. Considering
absolutely, it really is. Like you say, yeah. You know, it speaks to the spirit of the song as well. I think you're completely right, and I think it's also from my end of views. Maybe it shows the generational shift, because Everton and Liverpool have obviously always been rivals, but I do feel that is probably intensified in the last 30, 40 years. It was like, you know. My dad, what I'm saying is when he was growing up, he'd go to Liverpool sometimes if Everton were away and stuff like that. And that was a lot more commonplace in the 70s and 80s and 60s, whereas I think it is more divisive now.
I remember my dad working in Newcastle. You know, my dad used to work away a lot because he was a joiner. And I remember him coming home one weekend and said, oh, he'd gone to the Liverpool game the weekend before, because he's an Evertonian, my dad, but he'd gone to see Liverpool with his mates who were playing Newcastle.
Yeah.
And he said they'd been murdered at the game, and he had to stop some lad getting beaten up. You know, it was some Liverpool fan who'd been beating up him, and his mates who were up down there working had to stop that happening. You know, so yeah, it was very different back then. Mm-hmm. So you can't necessarily view the past from a future perspective. And no. I think that's the mistake a lot of fans do. They view this from a future perspective and place upon the context of today upon the past, and you can't, you know. And it was very, very different back then, you know. I mean, as you just quite rightly pointed out, I mean, if you're 30 years and below, or probably even more, 35, 40 years and below, you've probably never experienced standing at a derby match next to a Liverpool fan.
Yeah. Yeah,
I'm 64.
Yeah,
you know, and I remember going to Goodison, and there'd be, you know, Liverpool fans all over Goodison. They'd be in the streets. Yeah.
I've seen it myself. I remember Steven Gerrard going in 2001, and there was just people all around me celebrating. Yeah. It was really frustrating.
We'd go to Anfield, and you know, there'd be like Evertonians in the cop.
Look, famously, when Kevin Campbell scores in 99, you see a fella in a denim jacket jumping up, don't you? Absolutely. Giving his cover away after 4 minutes. But yeah, it does speak to a generational shift. And I think, as you say, it's really commendable from Peter. Yeah. Because, you know, a lot of people wouldn't necessarily do that. And obviously,
and being the honourable man he is, you know, and having that sense, I suppose, and that perspective.
Yeah,
you know, that perspective to go, okay, look, you know, I'm going to put my, you know, rivalries, you know, and I suppose, and my, you know, my feelings aside, and think, well, you know, God, let them have it. Why not? You know, that's, you know, Everton fans should applaud them for that. Do you know what I mean? They really should, you know, because, you know, that's a commendable thing to do. After that, the band didn't really have anything to do with the song. You know what I mean? Because it got recorded by a producer and other musicians and session musicians in London, but they did the vocals in Liverpool, and we were invited down to the studio.
Right,
So I remember being in the studio, and the lad who wrote the lyrics, he's never really got any credit for it. It was a guy called Joe Ainsworth, and he was a scriptwriter for Brookside at the time, you know.
Right, okay.
And he's an Evertonian, Evertonian, you know, and he wrote the lyrics for it, you know, and they look fantastic.
They fit into it so well, don't they?
Yeah, they work really well. And when we were standing in the studio, and the producers are getting different footballers in the room to try and kind of sing it. They had all the music, they had the backing vocals, they had everything. It sounded great. They had all the commentary, and I'm standing there, and some of the lads had come down as well, you know, Peter and them had popped in to have a listen, you know. I was sitting there, and the guy got the producer going, we don't know what to sing it, you know, because we put a few of the footballers in there, and they sounded awful.
Are you able to tell us who they were, or if you're towards confidence? I just don't think
mentioning Dave Watson's name would be fair.
I'm sure Waggy will forgive you.
Yeah. There was a few of them got in and tried, and they sung along to it and all that, but they weren't singers, you know. It was evident that
they
weren't necessarily that. And so the producer was looking around at us. You know, and the Liverpool fans and it just quickly disappeared. You know, like, I mean, and I understand that because if I'd been the boot, I'd been on the other foot, I'd have left it. Do you know what I mean? So, but I was standing there, and I had two bottles of beer and Pilsner, I think I was drinking Pilsner at that point, but I'd had a few beers anyway. And I was like, I'll do it. Give me the lyrics. So they gave me the lyrics. I went in there. I looked at them. I went one run through, and then they done a take, and I done it in one take.
Oh, that's fantastic!
I know the melodies and I know the thing. Yes. It was just a matter of reading from the paper and drinking
to fit it in because you play the song all the time. You're so used to it. So I think
I remember when I was doing it, I was looking through, you know, when you're in the studio, you can see into the engineer room, you know, where they are, because there's a big glass window, really, you can kind of see through, and all I could see was Joe Royal, right, and Joe Royal, Waggy, and a few of us just looking at me, and I'm thinking, I've got to get this right. I can't fuck this up. That's how sorry for swearing. I can't mess this up. Do you know what I mean? I've got this right. Yeah. So I nailed it. Like, I got it in one. And that's kind of really it. And we then, carried on having a few drinks, you know, and we retired from the studio to a bar called Mellow Mellow.
I remember it well on Slater Street. Yeah, I remember.
It's still there, but...
It's emerging nowadays, isn't it?
Yeah. We retired today because it was owned by... James Barton, you know, who's an Evertonian, of course, set up Cream, and it was
around the corner, I suppose, isn't it? Yeah.
Just around the corner. It was very community focused, so we kind of went in there and continued the drinks, you know, and at that point, I think we'd had more than we perhaps should have, and I suppose the Everton players that were with us. I'd had a lot more than what they probably should have, considering they had a cup final in a couple of weeks. Well, always remember our drummer. He's going to hate me for telling this story. He arrived late because he wanted to, you know, obviously know what was going on and join in the festivities and see, you know. And nobody was out. It was, you know, the farm didn't really need an excuse back then to get on the ale, you know what I mean? Back in them days, it was, you know, they didn't need an excuse to do it. So he turned up and then tried to catch up by drinking a load of...
Schoolboy era, that, isn't it, Keith?
Oh, yeah, because he tried to catch up. He said, I'm going to catch up with you because you all look well, Ethan. And James Barton's dad had just created a load of them vodka jelly things. He'd just done all those. So he battered them. And then the next thing... He's gone to the phone to ring his wife to tell her he's going to be late. You know, he's not going to be in until a bit late. And while he's on the phone, he just collapsed. Oh, he just collapsed on the floor. And all I remember is the manager, who remained nameless, saying, we've got to get him outside. He'll lose my license if he's... So we all had to carry him outside and wait for the ambulance, put him on a cab. And allegedly, although Roy denies it now, He had to go to hospital to get his stomach pumped, you know.
Oh, God. So, a bit of a dark turn, yeah.
So the making of the record was pretty eventful.
Yeah, you know? It is. I think, you know, that's brilliant. A lot
of people went through, you know, went through some difficult times to make the record. And some people have gone through difficult times since as a consequence of making the record, you know.
Very much so.
It's unfair, really, to be honest with you, because they don't deserve it, because... You know, without Peter and his dad and the Reds really in the band going, go on, Evan would never have had the song. Really.
It never happens, does it? And I mean,
no, it doesn't happen.
I think that there is someone that deserves the utmost credit. Yeah. You know, and I think it is, I do think you know, and we can be passing on our podcaster sometimes, yeah. But I do feel like nowadays it probably wouldn't happen. I genuinely feel like there'd be a bit more enmity generationally. Yeah. So I think it's a really important thing. I mean, once you've recorded it, then and it comes out, obviously it gets number 24 on the chart. And I love telling this because I feel like our younger listeners, I'm sorry, I'm aging both of us when I say that, but they like, they'll lose like the idea of cup final songs. Was for like me growing up,
yeah, obviously been some bad ones over the years.
Oh, there's been some terrible ones, but I was watching I was watching the Wonderful Howards Way, which you're part of last night, and Everton.
Yeah.
Here we go on Wogan. I mean, the boys in blue, we'll skirt over that. We won't revisit that too much. But it's a big part of me. Obviously, someone you worked with sucks a couple of years later does Blue Day for Chelsea, which was a big hit, you know.
Yeah,
I think you talk about the FA Cup evolving and it's not as important for a lot of people as it was. I actually feel like FA Cup songs are something that is really missed nowadays. I was just something really good. And you know, it's altogether now the original is a seminal song that was one of the best songs ever written. But I was quite young, I was 8 when this came up, so I wasn't necessarily aware of the original. And I kind of latched onto the Everton one. How does it feel after all this time? Because we're recording this in May 2025. Everton have recently beat Nottingham Forest away, and there's a chorus of the away fans singing it for long parts of the game. How does it feel to still hear it at the ground and hear the fans chanting it after all this time? I know it's different to you.
It's a bit odd because, I mean, obviously I can't sing anymore because one of my vocal cords removed because I've had throat cancer twice. So I can't sing anymore. Do you know what I mean? And I struggle to get to speak this well, you know? But to hear myself really, you know, singing the song and these years. I mean, I'm a season ticket holder, you know, so I'm
yeah, we've been in the Park End, we've seen off here. Yeah, I'll be in Park End like me.
And I sit next to David Feely, you know what I mean? Who's who I call the Toffee Llama. You know,
well, he's possibly the greatest Evertonian. He was the first guest we've had on this show, and he caught us in touch. I want to give a shout out to him. I was talking about something with Laura Gates' book recently, and I called him Mr. Everton. I stand by that because we do this podcast because we think we're knowledgeable. But David is Everton's like it's literally in his blood, isn't it?
He epitomizes what it means to be an Evertonian for me.
Absolutely,
and I love the bones of him, and he's my mate. And we're sitting next to each other at the game, and every time that record comes on, he's like, "This is him." everyone around us who's probably heard it a million times. I'm like, Dave, do you honestly know it's me? Like, it's because
he's nice, so proud of me after all this time. He's still like, in case it's someone new sitting there that week, you know. Next season, you'll have a load of new people by you, so we've a load of people to tell.
Yeah, well, a few of us are all still sitting by each other, apparently, because we kind of moved in a group, you know. We got the opportunity to do that, which was cool, you know. But yeah, so I mean, the making of it, I actually think it's possibly what when you're kind of thinking about what you're saying, it's probably one of the last great football songs, I think.
Absolutely, yeah.
You know, for someone that's, you know, taking a song that is about, you know, peace, I suppose it's an anti-war song, and Peter's right. Peter was getting a lot of stick the other week online because the song was used by Liverpool at the end of the season. I mean, I saw
that with the montage,
yeah. But that's all together now. It's a completely different song. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
in terms
of Snooki
Levin
version.
And he was getting a lot of stick. So kind of we put out on the farms thing, you know, all together now for everyone. And it is. Because if it wasn't for everyone, Everton wouldn't have been able to use it.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. So it
kind of is, and that was the position we took. Because, you know, he's in a bit of a rock and a hard place because he'll probably get it from Evertonians and he gets it from Liverpool fans as well, unfairly, because he's probably the person in the whole of this that has done the right thing.
Done the right thing, yeah. I mean, were you a little bit relieved, though, that they did use the original rather than your one for the montage?
Absolutely. I was well relieved. I was absolutely well relieved, you know.
Wouldn't want to text off David, would you, when it come on the telly? That's you on the telly.
Yeah, right. We go around telling everyone, yeah.
So did you get to go to the cup final following the recording as well?
Oh, yeah. Me and Steve went down for the day. You know, we got to, because they wanted to know, did we want pain? And I was like, no, I don't want pain, but if you get me some tickets for the final, I'll be extremely interested. And so we got some tickets for the final, really, that was it, you know, and I went to game, you know, but I would have gone anyway, you know, yeah. I'd have got in style, should we say, which is an old way of terming what we used, you know, climbing through windows in the 80s.
Dad tells me all about it, don't worry, my dad always tells me about how in the 80s, it was there in the 90s. You know, creativity, we'll call it.
Yeah, we'd have been there anyway, you know what I mean? But yeah, I got some tickets, and it was Neville Southall at the time, actually, that gave me the tickets, you know, even though we didn't necessarily know each other back then. But
yeah.
I know Neville a lot really well now. Yeah. But he I had to go to training ground to pick up the tickets, and Nev gave me a fistful of tickets, you know. So, and then we went. When that was the day when you know you'd have 30,000 tickets available, you know. And,
yeah, yeah, it wasn't like the FA giving the like different clubs and stuff. Yeah, yeah.
And there'd be 5,000 people bunging in, you know. You know, then were the days when all of that was all right, you know. When you know, but. So I got some tickets, and I went with Steve and the two boys.
It's after that Neville gave them to you as well, because he was unbelievable that day, wasn't he?
Yeah, so I got to, you know, hang out with the team, get drunk with the team, sing a song with them, create probably one of the, be part of the creation of one of Everton's most iconic songs. That, I mean, that was the last time we won anything.
Yeah.
So we must have brought in some good luck. That was the last time
we
won anything. And so I was part of that moment in a way, even in a small way. And
not small at all. It's significant. And I'm telling you this now, as someone who, I was 8 years of age when I came out, I didn't get to go to cup final. But as someone who's been following Everton through the years since then, and obviously we do this podcast, I'm obsessed with Everton. So outside of my wife, it's the love of my life. You know, you're a big part of that. And I'm not just saying that. Like, you know, as soon as I hear All Together Now, it makes me feel like I'm at Goodison Park. It makes me feel, you know, makes me think of the FA Cup win, and maybe it makes me think of being by Broad Green Hospital when the cup was coming past on the bus the day after, you know, and they're really important memories that they evoke. So, yeah, it's just not a small part at all in my eyes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, I thank you very much for that, you know, but it's part of Everton's history, I suppose, now, you know. And, and because it was probably one of the last great football songs that, and FA Cup songs, I suppose, that someone had brought out, because obviously it's built on a great song. And you've got to commend people like Joe Ainsworth, who wrote the lyrics. The lyrics are brilliant, you know, they really completely capture the club.
They really do, and it's the knowledge, isn't it? It's not just generic fanfare, Joe, about Catrick, about, you know,
he's amazing.
I just love Big Joe Royal coming back for more. It always hits me. I just love that line so
much. He's amazing, right? He's a musician. He sings, he writes scripts. He's a fantastic person, a real great blue. I never really got the credit he deserves for that, you know. I mean, I took it all, obviously. You know? Or he messaged Joe.
Well, definitely. And that's brilliant. And do you know what? It's lovely to hear that, you know, the creation of it, and that it's so fascinating and so interesting. And thanks so much for that, because I'm sure loads of Evertonians, particularly of my vintage, will be elated to get that insight. And as you say, it adds to the charm of the song as well, knowing it was a bit eventful, the creation and everything that's gone into it. And as you say, I think one of the things I will take away, particularly, is the overriding, is that Peter's acquiescence is very much the spirit of the song. He deserves a lot of credit for that, as you've
said
a few times now. And at a broader point, you rightly touched on there, unfortunately, it's kind of the theme of our podcast. We're called The Good Times a certain quote from a former chairman. We won't go down that rabbit hole too much, but the last 30 years have been a bit of a fallow period for Everton, but there's still been some decent moments in this. So since All Together Now, and since obviously the cup win in 95, what are the moments and players, matches, what stood out in the past 30 years? I think it's really upsetting and frustrating that we haven't won stuff, but there's still been moments in there for me that have made it worthwhile and made me enjoy going to the match anyway.
You know, I suppose, I mean, there's been some amazing moments over the last 30 years, you know. There's, even some of the great escapes that we've managed to achieve. You know, you kind of think about what we've had to work with as a club, really.
Yeah.
You know, what did your last chairman have to work with? What we've been working with over the last, you know, God, what, 10 years since, well, 11 years, 12 years since Moyes left, you know, what Moyes had to work with We've had a lot more over the last 12 years than what Moyes had to work with. But, you know, I think we've kind of rode our luck, but we've also kind of, we're charmed in a way, as opposed to, if we're not in a position of some of the other teams that are up and down from the championship on a regular basis. We've never been in that, and we seem to be a great escape artist. And I don't think
the stressful end days, though, aren't they? But we've done four of them now, and it's like, that's enough now.
The next couple of seasons, I've felt physically sick. Yeah. I think the Crystal Palace game, I was in the game with Dave, and I couldn't even watch it. I just felt physically ill.
I started crying full time, even though we won, because I was just like, I've had weeks of worrying. The next year with Bournemouth, I was getting married, I had a few things on my personal life, maybe give you more perspective. But that's, I would be lying in bed at night, and I'd be checking like online, like, what are the odds of Burnley winning the next game and stuff like that. Like, it was such a time on it.
When you kind of get a lot of stick, you know, for celebrating moments like that, because you're not, you know, yeah, you celebrated like you won the Champions League. Well, you know, we probably celebrated more than what we would if we weren't winning the Champions League. You know, imagine what we'd be like if we didn't win the Champions League, or in fact, we won't have anything. You know, Newcastle's a good example recently. You know, everyone's giving them stick for celebrating, but they hadn't won it for 50 odd bloody years. Do you know what I mean? And so I don't blame them.
No, and you know, there's only so many trophies to go around, unfortunately. You're not every season not going to be successful. And like, you talk about that point. I remember when Leicester won the league in 2016, but I remember seeing their celebrations and thinking, like, it was all right, but if that was Everton, there'd be like cars overturned.
Liverpool would be upside down if Everton.
It'd be stuff on fire, and all sorts of people hanging out of windows. The lot, it'd be amazing, but it would be crazy, wouldn't it?
Yeah, you get stick for them, but it's not necessarily a celebration in the sense and the way that people understand it. You're not celebrating something that you've won. It's relief.
And it really is, isn't it?
From what you just made the point, you felt ill for weeks, you know, and it was an awful feeling, but that relief and that elation that you're still going to be at the top tier of the game, you're still going to be kind of, you're not going to be that part of the generation that watched your club collapse and go down into a league that, you know, they may well struggle to get out of.
I think there have been existential issues as well, given the way the club was going financially. If Everton had gone down in either 2022 or 2023,
we wouldn't have got back up.
No, I think you know what happened to Sunderland in 2018 where they go down again. I wouldn't have been surprised if that happened with Everton if they went down.
Them type of things can kill you, you know, as a club. And so that's those types of moments. I've enjoyed them, but not for the reasons people would naturally think.
Yeah.
It's been more kind of relief and elation and the celebration and love that you've got for the people around you, you know what I mean? And the people that you go to game with, you know, who, you know, we're not, I mean, I always term us as the last of the Mohicans. You know, we are like the last of the great footballing clubs that hasn't fully gone corporate yet.
Yeah.
Now, if you look at the top six, you look at the top 10 clubs, I mean, they're not necessarily the clubs that we grew up with. You know, football isn't the game I grew up with. It's not the community game. It will pretend to be that. But it's kind of not, you know. It's kind of not, you know. If you look at some of the clubs, you know, even, you know, you want to mention Liverpool, you can mention Chelsea, you can mention Tottenham, you can mention Arsenal. They're not asked who's in the ground, as long as they're spending money over in the shop and over the counter and in the ground. That's what they're asked about. I mean, Everton probably hate me because I don't spend a penny. I mean,
we just go in with our season tickets, don't we? I get some chips from the chippy and a bottle of Coke from here because it's cheap, and I go, well, I'll have that, and then I'll go to the pub afterwards.
I'm looking to get a pie out of me, you know what I mean?
So,
there's an element of a club that, and the modern footballing club that doesn't want that. What they want is, you know, people coming in spending hundreds of pounds, you know. So, I think that's what people, you know, so that's why I call us that. We're last of the great footballing clubs, and we'll probably be joining them all quite soon. So I kind of get, I feel like deeply that loss of community and that loss of, you know, I worry a lot about the loss of the sense of who and what we are, you know, because who and what we are goes beyond the concept and idea of winning a couple of trophies, you know, you're not amazing. It is about how the club's ingrained in your past, in your family's past, and you know, in the community. It was born from the community.
It is. And I think community is key to Everton. I wrote a piece recently for Laura Gates' website, doing some pictures, and like, as I've gotten older, then obviously, you know, pearls of wisdom, as you get older, you get more experience and wisdom, however you want to frame it. But it hit me when we were away from the match of season for COVID. The thing I missed the most was the people and like the belonging, you know, and, you know, us being in the Park End, one of the things I wrote about, and you'll laugh at this, but one of the sounds I will miss, even though I won't miss the feeling, is like the shuttering of the seats when a late winner goes in, you know, at the Park End. And you just hear, oh, and everyone's getting off, and, you know, there's some team who should maybe win at Goodison Park going, is there a fire drill and stuff? And you're like, oh, my God. But
when all the seats go up, the noise it makes when you're downstairs and all that. I mean, I've done that a few times, you know, that I've nipped the toilet, and then you hear all the seats going up because it's half time, or, you know what I mean? Yeah, it's all them little things. I mean, I go to game now, and I always go early, a couple of hours, and I go and meet Dave, and I meet Dave Kelly, and all the lads at the food bank.
The brilliant work they're doing. I mean, it's a disgrace, you know, that our society has to do it, but the work they do is amazing.
The level of conversation that you can have. Hey, just shouting at the dogs there. The level of conversation that you have there is, I love the conversation, so I'll go there for the conversation with them and the chat and the banter, and we'll sit and talk for a couple of hours before the game. Not always about football. I mean, they're sitting there giving each other all kinds of stick, and it's that to me is what going to games about, as well as, yes, taking in the game. I mean, sometimes, especially in the recent years, that's been a lot more fun than the actual game itself.
It has. I think it's kept people sane and kept people going back, because we were reviewing 2013-14 the other day on the pod, and we were talking about a game against Aston Villa at Villa Park where loads of their fans weren't there because they were struggling. But I feel like that sense of community and the gallows humour and all those different things, they bring Evertonians back. And, you know, I don't think any other club's fan base could have saved the club the way Evertonians have done in the last couple of years. You know, there were times where it's like people put aside what they thought about the way the club's being run, or basically like, we've just got to get behind these and help drag them over the line. And I feel kind of privileged to have been involved in that personally.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, you know, I mean, the fans, I've got them over the line, you know, I mean, without a shadow of a doubt, you know, and they're a special bunch, you know. You know, they have been the extra man, you know, and in some ways, in some cases, the extra squad subs, you know what I mean? You know, I mean, and the players probably tell you that themselves, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, some of the atmospheres in Goodison have been immense over the years. I mean,
that Chelsea game in 2022 stands out to me. Do you know where the first one was, like, the realisation that we've got to get through this, and it was unbelievable, wasn't it?
The atmosphere was unreal, you know. Now, when Goodison rocks, it rocks, do you know what I mean? Yeah. I mean, I can go right back to the Bayern Munich game, you know what I mean, where it was, you know, the place was, you know, Bayern Munich, you know, it's just been, you know, the place is unreal, you know what I mean, you know, as a club, you know.
That's something I want to discuss with you before we let you go. A lot of people will know you for your music, but you were instrumental and a massive part of Howard's Way, the brilliant Everton documentary I did watch last night. Yeah. Just tell me a little bit about your feel about that. Obviously, I know you're involved with Dave, and, you know, he's a friend of yours, and he's in school in the integral, in the film. Just tell me a little bit about your experience of it and your memories of it and whatnot, because I love it.
I mean, at first I kind of knew it was going on, is Dave came to me and said he'd gone to West Ham, the FA Cup game, the night game at West Ham, and he'd gone, I think it went into extra time. And
we lost on pens, didn't we? It was a 2-2 on Monday night,
Yeah, we lost on pens, but Kevin Morales was amazing that night, you know.
Brilliant free kick he scored, wasn't he?
Yeah. And he said, he goes, I've met this guy at the West Ham thing called Rob, he said he works for Sky and he wants to make a documentary, and I was like, yeah, okay, yeah. And he said, and Dave's dead enthusiastic about that stuff, and I was like, oh yes, whatever. Never thought nothing of it, you know what I mean? And then about a year later, he said, remember that guy I told you about last year? And I'm like, no, tell me again. And he's like, his name's Rob. I was like, Rob who? You know what I mean? He's like, Rob, and he couldn't remember the second name of anybody. He goes, oh, it's Rob Sloman. said he's an Evertonian, he's a journalist, and because so when he said Sky, I was a bit skeptical. I was like, yeah, all right, whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And but he was a journalist who works at Sky, but he's an independent filmmaker. And said he wants to make a film about Howard and about more specifically about that team and the period being from, you know, 80. The period running up to 85, do you know what I mean? 85, 86. Yes. That short period, and the name of it at that particular point was Howard's Way. And he wants Dave to help, and he wants me to help, you know, with that. Because this person lived in Cornwall at the time when he was going through all that. So he lived for all them moments. So he used to travel to Everton as someone who was a supporter of the club who wasn't from Liverpool, you know.
Yeah.
But he felt that team were that good, and that moment is that significant in our history. No one had ever made a documentary about it. No one had ever done anything about it. And so we had some discussions, and then me and Dave both agreed that if you're going to do a documentary on that time, because one of the moments he kept citing to investors and people who were interested in it is that moment, and it's an FA Cup moment with when we won the FA Cup again for the first time in many, many years. Yeah. Where the BBC are filming all the Evertonians on Wembley Way, and the coach is going down Wembley Way, and it looks amazing, and everyone's just amazed about how crazy the Evertonians were, and how much it meant to them. And he was using that, and what me and Dave said to him at the time, said, look, see that. I said, right, you've got a group of Evertonians who were all getting in vans, who were doing whatever they needed to do. To get down to Wembley, hitchhiking, doing all kinds of things, you know, 20 people in the back of a Luton van, you know what I mean?
Okay, lovely seeing those scenes, isn't it?
You know,
yeah.
If you wanted, Liverpool at that particular time was probably going through one of its toughest periods.
It was the
beginnings of the Thatcherism, the Thatcher government. We had the highest youth unemployment rate in the country. Businesses were going out of business, and 10,000 people were getting made redundant and put on the dole.
Yeah.
The city was falling apart. We had nothing.
Yeah.
But what we had was our football.
Yeah.
And more importantly, what was very prevalent and very prominent at the time was the politics.
Yeah.
Militant tendency and the politics, and the city that was one of the only cities of that particular time, one of the few cities at that time that was standing up to the Thatcher government. At the time of the Conservative government. So what we kind of discussed with Rob is yes, we have to absolutely commend that team, but we also have to place that time in context and in the context.
It works so well, but it's absolutely vital as you say that.
And that was the theme. So it wasn't just a biographical piece. It was as much about Howard, the team, and the place and the people. I mean, so we said we'd love to do it, but for us, we would need to incorporate those elements, because you don't get all of that without all of those elements. You know, people were you know, had nothing, yet they were finding their way to Wembley and getting in. And more importantly, that gave us some dignity back. That team gave us some dignity and gave us some pride back in a moment in our history, I suppose, as a city and as a people and as a fan base, which was quite depressing, really, you know. And
challenging, definitely.
Very challenging. And, you know, my dad was unemployed. Everyone I knew was unemployed at that particular time. There was nothing. I mean, literally, it was like a war zone in the city. It was that kind of bad. You know, we'd just come through the riots and everything, you know, and... No, Neville mentions that in the
first
sight.
City's on fire, where are we going to go out?
He thought he'd set the city on fire for him, you know. Mm-hmm. And so Rob agreed. He said, yeah, okay, yeah, he got it. He understood it. You know, when we went through certain things, he understood it. So Dave's role was then more of a kind of producer, co-producer, and you know, on that role. And my role was on that context of, you know, that contextual advisory stuff, you know, in terms of we need to ensure we mention this, we need to mention that, you know, the main historical points really that were important. And more importantly, you know, Rob's role was obviously all the interviews with the team and the story, you know, that. And obviously he was the director and the filming of it, and I think he did a fantastic job, you know.
Absolutely.
And then they asked me to be like the music, do the music for it, which meant scripting the music, scripting it in a way where getting the right songs to kind of emotionally connect with the right moments, you know.
I think you really do that well. I mean, God, it takes me back to stuff with my dad, Joe, even some of the stuff, like your bit of Big Audio Dynamite, Joe, radio, really. Like quite niche stuff, but as you said, I think you've spoke about this maybe before elsewhere. Like, you're like, let me do it because I will. This is what people were listening to in Liverpool. This was the sound of the city.
You know, big Audio Dynamite, I was so made up. We got that as a tune.
It's a great song, isn't it?
MC Square, I was made up. We got that because it was like, you know, the lads who were on the terraces and going all the way matches, they were, that was the music they were listening to. No, David.
I've got off my dad, so I can tell you it's something
And so then there were certain songs in there, yes, the footballers were listening to and that were represented at the time, but there's certain songs and tunes in there that anyone who stood on the terraces in them days who were deemed, you know, where you know, kind of a certain type, they listened to them. Then songs were for them. They were for
them. Dave says, doesn't he? You can spot it. You know, he talks about Trevor Stephen and Paul Brayson when they go to England. He said, you can spot the scouts from a mile away. He had his hair swept, the way he wore his trainers, the way he walked. You could just see him coming a mile off. You go, bam, that's him, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, Trevor Stephen did look like he'd come off Ganny Farm, you know what I mean?
he did. And one thing in the film that's really interesting and kind of goes back to what we were discussing earlier about the importance of Cup Final songs. We touched upon Here We Go. What I find really interesting in the film is when they have that snippet from Top of the Pops, and it is, I'm going to say, I think it's 14th in the charts, but it's sandwiched between arguably two of the best songs ever. Don't You Forget About Me by Simple Minds, and Everybody Wants to Rule the World by Tears for Fears. Yeah. You know, people now, 40 years on, still know those songs, the lyrics.
Yeah,
those,
yeah.
And I just, I love that. I love that charm to it. Like, you know, the song was that powerful, and everything was that powerful that they could get, like, ensconced in, like, the nation's heart. I think it's great.
Yeah, and then there's the song nestled in between two of the greatest songs ever written, you know what I mean?
It's brilliant though, isn't it? It's part of the charm. Keith, this has been a genuine honour and a privilege for me. I've really enjoyed every minute of it. Before I let you go, obviously, just want to touch a little bit, because I don't want to keep you too long, but want to touch a little bit, obviously, on the first studio album. Is it 31 years? Is it the first studio album in 31 years from The Farm, the latest album, Let The Music
Take? Long, yeah.
Yeah, I'd say, well, that's what my research indicates, but I'll defer to you.
It's our first studio album in quite a few years, yeah, you're quite right, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got an album out on the 20th of June, and it's we've already done a couple of singles, and a lot of them have been played at the game, and we've done really well with them, and they're available on all streaming platforms. Not as Peter said the other day, when we had some gig, he got the word wrong. He said they're available on all streaming platforms.
I can just imagine that. Yeah, streaming. Yeah.
Everyone know what that is, but we've kind of been writing again, and it was just for fun, really. And we'd write music and sending these musical ideas to Peter and discussing it, and then we'd begun to do it before lockdown. Then lockdown happened, and things got in the way, but we started releasing again about 2023. Convinced the band to start putting music out again. Like, I was like, come on, we can just put it out, just put it on Spotify. You know, people were asking us, we were playing some of these songs at gigs, and people said, where can you get that song? And we were like, well, you can, because we haven't recorded them. So, and they were going to Brilliant, can we get them? We thought, well, we'll record them and just throw them up on Spotify. And that's what we did. And then we got a song called Feel the Love that we did, got picked up by Radio 2, and got Radio 2 playlisted. And then not only got Radio 2 playlisted, they got playlisted on every other BBC station in the country. and then got, you know, a lot of critical acclaim, which was fantastic for us, because that's not really what we were expecting. So it was like, okay, they must be all
right. It was what you were doing for you, but it's nice that it's got out there and got the exposure. The world's loved it.
We're doing all right then. And so then we put out another song, and we were just doing it independently with Ditto Music. You know, we were a great little, you know, the digital distributor locally who helped us out a lot, really. Like a guy called Mike Murphy, he helped us out a lot, really. And we kind of just doing it ourselves. And then And then Modern Sky and some record labels were kind of heard the tunes and got in touch and said, have you got an album's worth of material? And we were like, we got close to an album's worth of material, but we've got other ideas we can finish. So we went and finished an album and we went and gave them all the ideas. They loved them, signed a two-album deal with them, and we've got the first album out on the 20th of June.
Oh, brilliant. Have you got any gigs and tours come up? Apologies, I should have checked this. I wasn't sure when you were gigging.
Yeah, we just played in Scotland at the weekend. We played a festival, Pete and Diesel festival up in, a band, should I say. The festival called Black Isle Belter, which is up in Inverness, just outside Inverness. So we played there. We played Carlisle, our own gig, the night before, which was fantastic, the old fire station. Yeah. And we're playing at... I can't remember. We'll be playing this weekend. Scarborough. That's my wife then.
Is that Scarborough on Saturday, is it?
We're playing in Scarborough on Saturday, so...
Well, this is going out on Friday, on the 9th of May. So if there's any Evertonians in Scarborough on the 10th of May, get yourself to see the farm.
We're playing with Peter Hook from The Light, you know. Peter Hook.
Oh, brilliant. Wow. Oh, my God. I'm a massive Order fan. I'm jealous.
He used to be his bass player in New Order and one of the main, kind of originators of New Order. So we're playing with him on Friday. Then we've got a couple of gigs in a few weeks. We've just got like festivals on and off. But we're probably going to be doing a lot of in-stores as well, which are acoustic gigs you do in record stores these days. Yeah. A lot of them in the summer. We've got stuff going on all year, really,
Great. Well, we'll make sure to keep an eye on that and share that. So, Keith, from me, just a massive thank you for your time.
Yeah, thank you very much for having me. I've enjoyed it, Liam.
Oh, thanks a lot. Thanks.
Bye.